roll call again.
Yes, Dr. Davidson?
Here.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Raitt?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
You have a quorum.
All right, thank you. The next item on the agenda is call to the public. Those wishing to address the committee do not need to request permission in advance. However, the committee may limit those persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the committee will be given 5 minutes to do so. This address to the committee, for those of you who are on the phone regarding other agenda items where your application will be discussed, you will have an opportunity to talk at that time. Are there any people in the boardroom or on the line who wish to speak and address the committee at this point?
Yes, my name is Jessica Matus.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Mr. Chairman, this is Kathy. Jessica Matus is number 5 on the agenda.
Exactly. Jessica, you will have time to address the committee at that time, if that's all right.
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else on the line wishes to address the committee? All right. Thank you. Next item is item number 4, which is approval of minutes. We have... Can I have a motion to approve the December 6th regular session minutes?
Mr. Chairman, go ahead.
I was just going to say this is Dr. Davis-Wilson, and I was not present at that meeting, so I will be abstaining from this particular item.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the December 6th, 2019 regular session minutes.
Excellent. Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried. The next minutes are from the December 6th executive session. Can I have a motion to approve these minutes? And Dr. Davis-Wilson, I know you are abstaining also.
This is Dr. Davey. I so move to accept the minutes.
Thank you. And a second?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I second.
Great. Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor of approving the executive session minutes, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Next, item number 5, a discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding self-report submitted by Jessica Matus.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Heidi Herbst-Pakkinen, and I will be summarizing this for you, for the committee. The purpose of this review is to consider the licensee's self-report regarding a May assault charge and to forward a recommendation to the board. As we have noted, the licensee is present with us today at this meeting. In July of 2018, the board received the licensee's application for initial licensure. On that application, she disclosed a series of events that are listed for you in the report dating from 2002 to 2007, convictions of ranging from assault to disorderly conduct and DUI. She provided a written explanation of that information and disclosed participating in an outpatient rehabilitation program to address those events. At your meeting in September of 2018, you did a substantive review of the application and you forwarded a recommendation to the board to grant licensure, which was granted in September of 2018. In May of 2019, the licensee self-disclosed a new charge of domestic violence. You reviewed the self-report in August and determined to table the matter until a final disposition was received for this case. That information was received by us on December 16th, and it consists of licensee entering into a deferred prosecution agreement. We have supplied that information, detailed information about the disposition of that case for you. Please take note of some of the discussion that occurred in July by this committee, and it's before you for your consideration. And again, the licensee is present, and she wishes to address the committee.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and Committee. I would like to thank you for your time and consideration throughout this process. Things are actually moving forward in a very positive fashion. Your patience and compassion are greatly appreciated as I navigate through these pretty significant life events. If you have any questions while you deliberate, I am most certainly happy to answer anything that you would like.
All right, thank you. Committee members, any questions or concerns? I have one. The most recent incident. Was the other person involved the same person involved in earlier convictions in 2002?
No.
It was a different person.
Yes.
Okay. And you had left the residence, if I recall, before the police arrived. Is that true?
Yes.
And how much later did the police see you?
I'm sorry?
How much later from that incident, how much time lapsed between that incident and the time when the police saw you?
Yes, so I had called my mother to come pick up my children and myself around 10:30 a.m., and she did pick us up, one of my kiddos and myself, because I wasn't able to retrieve my son. And about 3 hours later, the police came claiming that I had scratched him on his face, which is not what had happened, and they went ahead and arrested me for that.
And then you said that was 1 hour later? I'm sorry.
About 3 hours later.
3 hours later.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you this question because you disclosed that from 2002 to 2007, you have been living an alcohol-free lifestyle.
Correct.
Is that important because you feel the alcohol contributed to your earlier challenges?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Is living an alcohol-free lifestyle important because you believe that alcohol contributed to your earlier problems, convictions, et cetera?
Yes. Yes, and I also stated that because he had said in the police report that we had been drinking that night, and which is not accurate. He had been drinking that night.
He had been, but you had not been.
Correct.
Okay. And when the officer came to meet with you 3 hours after you left, did the officer inquire whether you had been drinking?
No.
Okay. And you say you had not been drinking?
Correct.
So are you still living an alcohol-free lifestyle?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course.
Other questions for Ms. Mavis?
This is Dr. Davey. I just want to ask one clarifying question, and that's really with regard to kind of this the time frame, I guess, of things, right? So if we look back, the information you provided to us, when you had kind of a rough patch from 2002 to 2007, correct? That was kind of the first period of time where things, where you were having struggles with alcohol and several arrests, correct?
Yes.
And then this is the first incident that has been of recent time, correct?
Yes.
So we have almost a 12-year kind of time frame between what was going on in the early 2000s till now, correct?
Uh-huh.
My final question is really about the future, I guess. Obviously, we have legal counsel here. I'm not a lawyer, but I do understand that when there is a domestic dispute call made, that there will be charges pressed against at least one individual, if not both. What sorts of mechanisms, legal mechanisms, are you using to protect yourself from these sorts of incidences in the future?
What sort of legal mechanisms am I using? Is that your question?
Yeah, I mean, do you have restraining orders in place? Like, what are we going to? I mean, what's the long term plan here for you? Obviously, you're going through counseling, with regards to anger management. I guess the question is, the last thing I'm going to want to see is, 3 months from now, this happening again. Obviously, you don't want that to happen again either. So what things are you putting in place as an individual to help mitigate that from occurring again?
That's a really great question. So first and foremost, I cannot do an order of protection because we're pending a divorce. And apparently that's a big no-no. Legally, I can't do that. However, I have moved out of the home. I moved out a while ago. He does not know where I live. And anytime we do any... Sorry, this is emotional.
Wait a second, please take your...
Anytime we do exchanges with the kids, we meet at a Circle K. I do not put myself in a position where I'm ever alone with him, so I try to protect myself as much as I can. And we also do co-parenting. We have any kind of communication. We do it through our therapist.
So there's always that third party involved in our communications. Because him and I, we cannot have actual conversations. So there's, from a legal standpoint, there's not a whole lot I can do. But there are other things that I am doing to make sure that him and I are never alone and everybody is safe. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that does answer my question. It's just, you know, how are you mitigating that to not being alone and making sure that you're remaining in a public location where there are people around is the information I was looking to hear versus in a home, a private home.
Okay, perfect.
And just finally, your completion date for your court-ordered referral is May 30th of 2020, correct? And
yeah.
I believe your session, your first of your 10 sessions, you just began just last week. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then board staff, when those are completed, will we get notification of those, or can we request notification of those?
Yes, it's incumbent upon the licensee to submit that information to us.
And finally, I would just like to say that while this is a difficult situation for you, I would just like to say thank you for coming to us with this and by self-disclosing this information and getting it to the board in a timely fashion. As difficult as that probably was, I greatly appreciate you taking that step and the ownership that you put forth and being honest with each of us as committee members. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I appreciate that.
That's all I have, Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Any other questions or concerns from other committee members?
Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Davis Wilson. I just wanted to echo what Dr. Davey said to Ms. Mattis, that this is something that, while it be difficult, we really do appreciate you being forthcoming, sharing this information. It's a lot of vulnerable information for you to share with us. And we appreciate your transparency through this process, and we hope, I was actually quite delighted in your introduction that things were moving in a positive direction, and so we hope that that continues for you, and that you continue to keep the board, you know, kind of in the know of your status, but I agree with Dr. Davey that we do appreciate the actions that you've taken professionally to address this matter.
Thank you. That means a lot.
This is Dr. Davidson again. You realize, I hope you realize, we are, this committee can only make recommendations to the Board of Psychologist Examiners, we take our responsibility seriously to make recommendations that are fair and helpful. We don't know what really happened in all of these incidents. We can go by history, and you do in fact have a history, but it's a far, you know, 12 years ago that history stopped, which is an incredible span of time. So whatever you've been doing in that between that time and the last incident, it was working for you. You attributed alcohol as one reason for the challenges you experienced in the past, and you have taken steps to eliminate that. You're taking anger management classes, and it's probably too soon to tell if they're helpful or not. And it's also uncertain to us whether you have anger problems, but it was clearly a part of the resolution to your situation. I bring this up because as a behavior analyst, you will encounter people who are violent and aggressive, and you will need to be exercise restraint. And I don't know if you have that ability or you don't have that ability. But I do want to ask you if these anger management classes are not helpful, do you feel like you need or benefit from something like this? And if so, do you have a plan for doing something in addition to this if in fact they're not helpful to you?
So I actually, I am a human being, and of course we get frustrated and angry at times. However, I am probably like one of the most patient and kindest people you'll ever meet. And on piece of paper, I look like this angry individual, and I'm not an angry person. I have been working in the field of behavioral health for over 11 years, and I have restraint. And I've been working with kids forever, and I have restraint. Even if they bite, kick, slap, whatever it may be, I have patience of Job. And so to kind of try to answer the question of if these classes work or not, I'm going in because I have to. I'm keeping an open mind, and I'm sure I'm going to learn some things. However, I don't see myself as having anger control type of issues. However, I have sought out my own personal counseling to deal with everything that has kind of come with all of this. It's been pretty traumatic, to say the least. So, that's just kind of what I'm doing on my side of things, is just doing my due diligence with the law as required, to get this removed. And then, but personally, I am taking my own counseling. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you for that answer.
Okay, perfect.
So, committee members, we have a few options available to us that was outlined in the memo from Jennifer. Does anyone have a recommendation?
This is Dr. Davey. At this particular point, I think what I would like to see, and I can put this in a form of a motion, is that the board, the Committee of Behavior Analysts, recommend that we take no action at this time, and that we request information regarding the completion of her counseling sessions and the completion of the court process with regard to this charge.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, can you clarify, would that recommendation be just at the preference or request of the licensee to keep us kind of informed of the process, or are you requesting that we hold this matter and postpone it until after May?
Thank you for that question. I believe I am leaning towards having the licensee keep us informed.
This is Jean Galvin. From what I'm picking up from the motion is that you would take no action at this time, require the licensee to submit documentation to the board, notifying the board of the final adjudication of this matter. And you would always have the opportunity, Dr. Davis-Wilson, if at that time for some reason she didn't complete her court-ordered requirements or there was an intervening charge or something, you would have the option at that time to take additional action.
Well said.
Thank you.
Okay, so can I have that in a motion?
I so moved. I believe I already made the motion. The motion is no action at this time, and that the licensee keep board staff informed as to the process with regard to the court matter and the counseling.
All right. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Chairman, I second that motion.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Dr. Davis-Wilson. I just wanted to say, while I understand the position of the committee, I do, for me personally, professionally, I do worry and kind of have just an underlying little bit of a worry about this continuing to be a pending matter for Mrs. Mattis. It sounds like she is going through a lot. She has been very, very cooperative. She has been very forthcoming. Again, I understand the position. I understand the motion, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I do for myself. I'm personally struggling with this idea of, you know, we have somebody who has shown us a very, 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 very above standard professionalism. And I know that this is a very difficult time for her. So I just wanted to go on the record as saying that I do also have thoughts about, you know, just allowing or putting it to the individual to just keep us informed and not keep this matter going. But that's just my two cents.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item number 6. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. We have 8 applicants on the list, and the first one is was tabled from last time we met, and I understand that Mr. Smith was going to be present on the call.
I am present.
Is he here?
Yes, I am present.
All right. Welcome back, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
So we had asked Mr. Smith a detailed written explanation of all and all documentation relating to the Department of Education rescinding your certification and the termination from Sequoia. In your written statement, please explain why these events were not disclosed in your application. We had also asked Mr. Smith whether or not he had a current, and if so, provide a copy of the card. Provide a detailed written explanation of the medical condition or diagnosis for which the card was issued and a manner in which you're using the medication. Have your treating provider and or providers who authorized provide a letter to the board which includes, but not limited to, the diagnosis, how long the provider has been treating you, excuse me, and the recommended dosage. And then finally, the last thing we had asked for was if you are currently undergoing mental health counseling. If so, who is your current provider? And if not, when did your counseling end? In my review of the materials and the response that you sent, I was able to see an explanation of why the DOE rescinded the principal certification, was disclosed on page 34 and 35 of our documents, and a detailed explanation was laid out in pages 72 through 91. And that was regarding the testimony of the Professional Practice Advisory Committee, initially recommending that the State Board approve the principal certification, but then later denied it due to unprofessional conduct. I also saw letters from four providers about all stating the reason was for I also noted that there was documentation of having received counseling in 2015. What I didn't see was information about the termination from Sequoia, and I didn't see the current So, Mr. Smith, can you give us some more information about what's missing here?
If I may, this is Jean Galvin. Just before we continue, if there are any medical conditions that we need to discuss, we do have the option of going into executive session, just so we don't disclose anything on the record. Thank you.
Because that was my issue in the initial, when I spoke with Ms. Folks on the 29th, the 13th, and the 23rd about my protected health information and how it was disclosed publicly and then how it was disclosed and put on the internet after I asked several times if it could be redacted or removed. So that's another issue I had about my protected health information being disclosed out there.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith, the last conversation we had, sounds like you have the date. I did go back to that recording and figured out how to redact everything, and it was done within a couple of hours of that last conversation I had with you. And Dr. Davidson, his fingerprint clearance card, oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong card. I did receive his medical marijuana card. I'm not sure why it's not in the scanned copy. We do have it on file.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and with the email from the 31st that was attached as my cover letter, that was my only concern, because as a professional, I don't want my image or anything tainted by, or even, what's the word? I mean, just, I don't want anything labeled by my medical history or medical diagnosis or anything like that. So that's why I just want to make sure that everything along that part is taken care of, and I just want to make sure that we're above board on that. With regards to EDCE and Sequoia Pathway, the only thing I had was that email, so that's why I forwarded the email with the letter that was attached, because they sent that email directly to my employer, which is EDCE, and it went to the HR manager, Lori Ainge.
So do we have that copy of that email in our records?
It should be there. I'm not sure if it's just this short email.
It's a short email.
Okay.
That email was in the attachment, which was the letter.
Is it the
It should be from Garnett Winters.
Okay, that's I'm not. I apologize. I'm in the hard copy. I do not have access to the electronic copy, but it's the email that is listed. It's from Alan Smith, and he forwarded it to me on Monday, October 28th, 2019, and it is from Garnett Winters. From the Arizona Department of Education, and it was sent to Mr. Smith on November 9th, 2017.
14. It's page 14 of your PDF.
Page 14 of my PDF is about the ADE's Assistant Attorney General clarifying that Mr. Smith should not be submitting other applications prior to December 22nd, 2020.
That is correct from what Mr. Smith told us. The that's the only document he has. He does not have one from Sequoia directly.
No, I do not.
I'm sorry. Mr. Smith, did you say something?
Oh, yeah, I said no, I do not have anything else regarding from Sequoia Pathway. I apologize for that.
Since this was something that this committee asked for, can you explain to us what was the reason for your leaving Sequoia Pathways?
Well, the reason I left Sequoia Pathways is I was hired as a SPED coordinator, and I had SPED certs, and where I had my certs, they were all valid at the time, and then when I went to apply for my principal certification, ADE notified EdKey that I wasn't allowed to have any certs. So that's the reason, because in a position where you're teaching special education, if you're not certified, you can't be in that position. So I had to be removed from that position.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That makes sense to me. I don't see any further concerns with this application, and I would recommend it be moved forward to the board.
Is that a motion, Dr. Davidson?
Any further discussion from other committee members?
Yeah, I mean, I think my question still remains with regard to ARS 32-2091, really highlighted in number one of our requests for information, right? Not have had a professional license or certificate refused, revoked, or suspended or restricted in any jurisdiction. You know, the question that comes to, I think, this committee is, has the issue that led to the, you know, what is called a refused certificate at this point, since it was provided and then pulled back, has that been ameliorated? Has the applicant put forth an effort that the board believes that he has corrected these past actions? I think that's really the question that still remains for me is the applicant on the right path?
Can I ask you? So,
I'm speaking right this second. Thank you.
Okay.
And if so, then the committee needs to, I think, really have a chance to determine if the information provided gives us proper information to say yes, or if there's additional information that we might be interested in terms of evaluation of the individual's efforts to address some of these issues that led to what our sister board over in the Department of Education referred to as unethical behavior. And so that's really still the question I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith, did you want to say something?
Yes. So in regards to what Mr. Davey just said, it's two incidents, one in 2012 when my brother passed away, and one in 2014 when I got arrested for possession. The first incident I rectified by going through grief counseling and making sure that I was on the up and up. The second incident I rectified by making sure I was able to use my medications legally, and also removing the people who were in my house that caused me to be in that situation out by, again, placing my uncle on a restraining order, who is now in Missouri serving certain time for whatever he did. But again, removing those people out of my life. So again, I don't understand why I need to explain that stuff, because it was in 2014 or 2015. This is 5 years ago. I've been on the straight and narrow. I've been working with kids, or not even straight and narrow per se, because that gives it a negative connotation. I've just been living my life. I mean, I've worked as in the capacity as a behavior analyst, not as a board should be announced, but just working with individuals for the last 3 years. I just make sure I coach in basketball. I'm just doing a bunch of positive things. So to hear like two incidents in my life stigmatizing a negative connotation, again, is disheartening.
Thank you for that explanation. I'd like to also add that,
Chair.
Dr. Davey?
No, oh, no, go ahead first, and then I had a question.
Yeah, I just would like to respond back to the applicant, Mr. Smith. Please know that I'm not here trying to stigmatize you in any way for past incidences. The charter of this committee is to ensure public safety and to ensure the individuals that we license hit Arizona state statute and laws. That is our job. And so the questions we ask you are simply to discern whether or not to move your application forward to the psychology board for licensing. So please understand that when we are asking for information and asking the committee to think about and to discern whether or not you have moved to remediate the issues that occurred in 2012 and 2015, that is our task, is to make sure that you have moved beyond those. And that is the question in front of us. If we believe that that's the case, then we will move forward.
Oh, I totally agree with that. But when I go back to the October 28th meeting, and when you read off all my information regarding my statement and the police officer's statement, you were saying that there's some inconsistencies in the statements between what I said and what the officer said. But you guys, what you failed to realize or read was the administrative law judge who is charged with dealing with criminal statutes, and he found everything I said very credible. The only thing they got me on was a technicality, and because I had it. It's like with that charge, it's possession. It's either you have it or you don't. And it took them 5 months to charge me because my information was credible. All they had was it was in my car, but it wasn't mine. So, again, that's the only reason I say is I just want to make sure everything is on the up and up, and I just want to make sure everything is framed in a positive light as to the way it's supposed to be. Because when that administrative law judge read everything, he had the police report, he had all the same information you do, and he found my statements very credible. So that's the only thing I'm just trying to make sure we're working through.
Okay. Was there another comment from Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a question that I think is going to be legal advice, and we need to go into executive session for. So I would like to motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay. I have a motion. Can I have a second?
Dr. Davis, I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Right. Okay, motion carries.
Okay, so there is a number.
How do we tell?
In the meeting reminder email, members of the committee, go to that email, and there is an executive session phone number for you to call. So we'll hang up here and call in. Mr. Smith, you can either stay. Well, I think when we hang up, it's going to disconnect you, but you can call back in to that line that you've called into and just wait for us to join you again.
About how long?
Hard to say. Maybe to 5 say. Minutes.
Yeah, usually about 5, maybe 10 minutes at the most.
Okay.
Start without you.
Yep.
Thank
Alrighty.
You. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the 8th person to join the meeting.
Hello, board staff and council are back. We are just getting the recording devices queued up. Just a moment.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess we're ready to go.
All right, do we need a roll call again?
Yes, Dr. Davidson?
Here.
Dr. Davey?
Here.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Here.
Dr. Raitz?
Here.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
You have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Mr. Smith, are you here?
Yes, I am here.
All right, thank you for your patience. Well, we're going to see if there are any other questions for you in order to establish all the facts. We'll do this briefly, and then after that, we will go into deliberation, and that will be a discussion among committee members only. You will be able to hear it all, but you will not be a part of the discussion. So before we do that, are there any other further questions for Mr. Smith?
This is Dr. Davey. Yeah, I only have one question. Oh, sorry.
Dr. Davey.
Go right ahead.
My only question is, since the incidences in 2012, 2015, have there been any other incidences that the board is not aware of at this point?
No. In 2012, again, my brother. In 2012, again, it was my brother passing away, so that didn't happen again.
Yep. Yep. And then 2015. Yep. Thank you very much.
And the arrest was 2014. It just got dismissed in 2015. Again, I arrested 2014. I wasn't charged until March of 2015. Again, there's a 5-month gap in there. I can't explain why Scottsdale PD did it that way, but that's what happened in 2014.
Yep. So the point of the question is there have been no other incidences since the one that was dismissed in 2015. Thank you.
No, sir.
Thank you. Dr. Davis, welcome.
Mr. Smith, my only question is pertaining to the use of marijuana prior to the arrest. So you stated in just a few minutes ago when speaking to Dr. Davey that one of the changes that you made is to learn how to legally. Can you clarify for me, were you using marijuana recreationally prior to that time, or what did you mean by legally?
Well, the reason I use the word legally is because I was charged with possession of marijuana, so I at least want to be able to legally. But the whole reason, the purpose behind me even getting the card was initially when I was diagnosed with my knee issues, I was given prescriptions, and those things tore my stomach up and made me get sick, and it's just like I ended up, why keep doing that to myself when there's a natural method that's legal to me?
I understand that. My question still is, were you using marijuana that date?
No. I passed every single drug test at every job I've gone to. So, yeah, there was no recreational marijuana use.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Smith? Mr. Smith, do you have any other comments for us before we go into deliberation?
No, that's it. I just want to make sure that everything's framed in a positive light, or at least in the right time frame, so that everything's heard. Because I just want to be treated as fair as possible. That's all.
Thank you. Okay. So, do we need a motion before we go into deliberation?
You do not need a motion before we go into deliberation.
Okay. Questions or comments from any other committee members?
Mr. Chair, we're in deliberation now, correct? Or no?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, so, you know, this is Dr. Davey, I think my points are, you know, when we looked at the statute about the issue of the Arizona Department of Education essentially providing, then pulling back his certifications, you know, that was several years ago. I think we have all of the information that's been provided to us for incidences that wrapped up in 2015. You know, I think that the applicant has been working through the process in terms of continuing his education, continuing his work towards becoming a certified behavior analyst at the national level. He has achieved that. You know, I think that those are all definitely steps in the right direction for the applicant.
Yeah, Mr. Thank Chair, as I see it, Mr. Chair, the decision that was made originally to decline the license was done prior to the dismissal of the complaint or concern. And so I understand kind of the process that the Department of Education has to go through as far as, and we have very similar processes. If you decline a license, there's, you know, periods of time and yada, yada, yada. And so I agree with Dr. Davey that that time frame in that instance was a little bit funky, and that at this point we've been provided all the information and that that Mr. Smith has taken steps to ensure that he has met the requirements to perform competently and safely. I appreciate the answer to the question. I obviously was a little bit concerned with the phrase "learned how to legally," but I do think that the response was sufficient for what I was looking for. One other little just point of note, and it's I don't even know if it's deliberation more of it's just educational. Mr. Smith stated that he has practiced with children as behavior analysts, but not board certified. I fully understand the intent of the comment that was made. I do want to clarify, though, that licensure and certification is different in that, in certification, the certification board does not allow for us to call ourselves board certified behavior analysts, but they have no jurisdiction over someone calling themselves just a behavior analyst. Here in Arizona, it's a little bit different because we do have a title and practice statute. And so just more informative to make sure that here in Arizona, calling yourself a behavior analyst, referring to providing behavior analyst services without supervision, those sorts of things, or without independent licensure, those sorts of things could become problematic. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that more as just a point of education, because I know the intent of the comment, but it is one of the little funky things that happens between certification and licensure. And that is all I had.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments or concerns? If not, Jen, does anyone have a motion?
Dr. Davey, I'll move that this be forwarded to the board for approval of license for the applicant.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second.
This is Dr. Stanoff. I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Your application will be forwarded to the board, the licensing board. This is just a recommendation. The board could choose to do something different, but I think they will respect the time and effort that we put into this to make this decision. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, and I definitely appreciate that clarification on behavior analysts and, like, the titles and everything. I will definitely respect that going forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
Next applicant, their application is for Ashley Ramirez. Dr. Davis-Wilson, will you do us the honors?
Yes, Ms. Ramirez is applying for initial licensure. Ms. Ramirez passed her exam in 2015 after completing 1,500 supervised hours in California from the periods of March 1st, 2013 to May 30th, 2014. She completed her master's degree in teaching and special teaching with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis from National University in 2014. And based on my review of the application, there were a couple of points that she did have to make some edits to. She properly made those edits and clarified the corrections with the dates that she made those edits. And I have no issues with this application. I recommend it to be forwarded.
Thank you. Any concerns from other committee members? Okay. Hearing none, our third application is from Christina Osberg. Dr. Davis-Wilson, this is you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Stenna.
I just need to disclose that I was Ms. Osberg's instructor, unless she was a student at ASU, but I feel that I can impartially review her application.
Okay. Thank you for that. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Ms. Osborne just recently passed her exam in 2019. Congratulations to her. She, my computer just shut off. She completed her, luckily I have notes. She completed her master's degree in May of 2019 through the ASU ABA program in the Department of Psychology. She did complete 1,500 hours during her two-year time with that program. Her hours were done with Touchstone Health Services and SARC across three licensed supervisors. We've been provided all of the information, and at this time I have no concerns with this application and recommend it for review of full board.
Thank you. Any questions or concerns from other committee members? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to applicant number four. This is Courtney Hilgard, Dr. Stenoff.
Ms. Hilgard graduated from National Lewis University with a Master of Science in Education in 2015 and then completed her Applied Behavior Analytic coursework at Northern Illinois University in August of 2016. She received 1,527 hours of supervision under three different supervisors. Where she got her supervision in Illinois, and at the time, Illinois does not, or currently still doesn't have a licensure requirement. And she became a BCBA in November of 2016. I didn't note any concerns with the application. I'd recommend that it be forwarded to the board for approval.
Thank you. Any other questions or concerns from other committee members? Okay. Applicant number five, Emily Orne, Dr. Davey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Emily Orne is coming forward for licensure. I reviewed her application. She's a graduate of Ball State University. She has completed the application appropriately. She noted that she worked through her supervision while at the Autism Society of North Carolina.
board staff aptly provided us information showing that North Carolina is not a state that requires licensure at this particular point. Therefore, her application should be moved forward for approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or concerns, questions for other committee members?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I have a question for you regarding North Carolina. I don't know if you know, but isn't North Carolina the one that does require that all services are supervised by or signed off on by a psychologist?
I don't know if that's North Carolina. I thought that may have been one of them that was under the medical board.
I was just curious. I mean, it makes no difference. It just that I personally would like to review their licensure requirements because I do think that they have a little bit of a funkiness, but it's also wrapped into even the provision of services entirely. So I have no concerns with this application. I was just curious.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay, hearing none. Applicant number seven, Gabriella Rosslutner. Dr. Davey, that's you again.
Mr. Chair. Dr. Davey, may I say something? Moment. The next three applicants, I just wanted to disclose that I was the instructor for the next three applicants during their program.
And this has no bearing on your ability to be objective?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does not.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Davey.
Yes, this is Dr. Davey. Yep, I'll move forward with the applicant's license. Graduated from the program at Arizona State University at Tempe, completed her supervision at the Vista Center, Excel, and St. Dominic Savo Academy. All of her supervisors were licensed in the state of Arizona during said supervision. I see no problem with this application and would like to move it forward.
Thank you. Other committee members, any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none. Applicant number seven is Jonathan Ruthlin. Dr. Rates?
Yes. So Jonathan completed his master's degree in applied behavior analysis from ASU in 2019. He received supervision at two locations, Hope Group as well as Ally Pediatric, for a total of 1,507 hours. He also received his BCBA national certification in August of 2019. In reviewing the application, I didn't have any concerns and would recommend it be moved forward.
Thank you. Any comments or questions or concerns from other committee members regarding this application?
Mr. Chair, this is Dr. Davis Wilson. It is documented that I am recused from this matter.
Okay, thank you. Okay, hearing no concerns, we will move on to our last and final applicant, Sarah Lyman. Dr. Rates.
Yes, I will note that Ms. Lyman and I were both at SARC at the same time, but we worked in different departments, so I feel like I can move forward without any bias. Ms. Lyman graduated with her master's from ASU in applied behavior analysis in May of 2019. She received supervision from two different organizations, Devereaux and SARC, between September of 17 and April of 19 for a total of 1,502 hours. She also received her board certification from the BACB on 8/31 of 19. In reviewing the application, I didn't have any items of concern and would recommend that it be moved forward.
Thank you. Any questions or concerns from other committee members regarding this application.
Mr. Chairman, if I may interject quickly, just with a clarification, this is Heidi. I think that we have on record Dr. Raitz as having recused from the consideration of the number three applicant, Ms. Osberg, but if we missed capturing that for the record, I want to make sure that the record reflects that.
That is correct. Yes, I was recused from her application.
Thank you for affirming that. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks for catching that. Okay. So we have eight applications, all recommended to move forward to the board. And we have one recusal from Dr. Raitz for applicant number three, and one recusal from Dr. Davis-Wilson from applicant number seven. And I have a motion to forward these applications.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I go ahead. I'll second that then.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item number seven, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding license renewal and reinstatement request from Leslie Barrera-Durantes, Dr. Raitz.
Yes, so I can review this item. We received notification from Leslie that she did allow her application to, or her license to lapse. Her license was due to be renewed at the end of October, and that was not renewed. She sent a letter letting the board know that she received notification that her license had lapsed and expired. She submitted her application to reinstate her license. In that application, she did indicate that between October 31st until December 4th, when she became aware that she was continuing to practice during that time. In review of her reinstatement, she did meet the requirements of her CEUs and completed what was needed in order to reinstate her license. And again, did indicate that she made a mistake and was not careful in looking at the timelines for her renewal of her license. And this was her first renewal and was unfamiliar with the process and was very apologetic for that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Dr. Davis-Wilson. I am recused from this matter.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I thought Dr. Durantis was on the line earlier. I'm not sure if she still is, but you might want to ask.
Yes, I am on the line. Hi.
You are here. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again?
Yeah, if you have questions, just let me know.
Okay. Do you have any statement for the committee?
Yeah, well, this is like my first time renewing my license. In fact, I got my ISMA license in June. Then, yeah, of course, it was my mistake. And everything, I was in the understanding that we need to renew every 2 years. Then I just have the license for 4 months, around 4 months. Then, yeah, there was like so many things going on, just becoming familiar with the process and everything. As soon as I realized that I did this mistake, I talked directly with my clinical director for the company that I work, and I talked with her. Then after that day, I stopped working. I haven't done anything related with behavior analyst. I am just doing office work for now until we get this resolved. Then I think that is very important for me to say, and that I want you to know that I learned my lesson, and that I just did like the thing that I think it was like the ethical thing to do. And yeah, I am just trying to fix my mistake. And yeah, I just did like the right thing, talk with my company, and then I stopped working immediately. And I won't work until Tuesday otherwise, of course. And just making sure that it doesn't happen again. I have read a lot. Like, I am very familiar with the process now. Then, yeah.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Barrera? I'm sorry. Ms. Durantes.
I don't have questions, but I do appreciate both in the letter and your statement that you immediately worked with your company to identify that your license had expired and to change the type of work you were engaging in, and that you let us know and were transparent about the fact that there was a delay there between when you became aware that your license had lapsed and the activities you were doing. So thank you for that transparency.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Davey. I thank you for the transparency, but I also point out one thing, and that is that it is your responsibility to be familiar with all things related to your license. That is all the statutes and all the rules. That includes the renewal process. That includes deadlines. And in your letter, it appears that you did not attend to those matters until now. And so I would just as strongly as I possibly can encourage you that you need to review the statutes and the rules of being a behavior analyst, a licensed behavior analyst in our state. That is your obligation. That was your obligation prior to becoming licensed in our state. And so that particular paragraph of your letter was a little disconcerting to me, that it's just now that you're becoming familiar with those steps.
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry about that. Like, I truly understand that it's my responsibility. It's why today I am just trying to fix my mistake and learn from it and be, like, very, very familiar, because I understand how important it is. And, yeah, I don't have any excuses. It's just, like, today, me wanting to fix this, and I can continue with my profession.
I'd like to add something related to that, if I may. Board staff sent 3 emails to a Gmail account of yours. Did you receive those emails?
Yes, I received the emails. And, yeah, I have to say that is organization, like personal organization, it has been truly a nightmare. Use that my job and everything. Then I am doing everything, of course, to be organized and have all the things in order and everything. I have like a personal email with a lot of spam, with a lot of things, but believe me, I am trying to organize everything and have my priorities in there. Yeah, I don't have excuses for that. I received the notifications. It's just organization and being familiar with the process. But I think right now, I am now.
So the reason I bring that up is I wanted to make sure that we have your correct email on file. And if that's not the correct email on file, then you need to log in to your account and change your email. Make sure that the emails coming from the azdoa.gov don't go into your spam or your junk mail.
Yeah, of course. I am truly, truly organizing everything. As I say before, I don't have excuses. You have my right email address. You have everything. I receive all those things. But yeah, I am working on organize everything, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from committee members?
Ms. Durantes, this is Dr. Stenhoff. Following up on what Dr. Davidson was discussing, there's a letter also dated November 5th that was sent to you as well. And I guess you mentioned that you're doing some things to kind of try to rectify the situation, and you received both email and letters from the board. So I'm a little confused on where there was a lack of an understanding of what needed to be done. And maybe more importantly is what are those actions you're going to do in the future that will rectify this, or so this doesn't happen to you again?
Yeah. I am doing everything to make sure that it won't happen again. And yeah, I am willing, to assume all the consequences that this mistake in all areas. And as for the letter, it was my mistake. I read the one that I received on December 4th. That is the day that, the time that I opened the letter and that I read that. I immediately called my clinical director to let her know. I did this mistake. I had no idea. And then after that, I stopped working until this resolved. Even when he was like, okay, what can you do during this time? Then I just refused to do all behavior analysis work at all, as you say.
Did that answer your question, Dr. Stenhoff?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from committee members? Does anyone have a motion they'd like to put forth?
Mr. Chairman, this is Heidi. I'm just wondering if the committee would like for legal counsel to outline the options that are available with respect to this matter.
Yes, please. Does that need to be an executive session, or can that be here?
It's up to the committee. I can lay out your options, and then if you want additional detail or recommendations, we could go into executive session. But you do have an application in front of you. So with respect to that application, you can deny the application. You can grant the application. You would also be able to consider whether to open a complaint for the licensees practicing a certain number of days without benefit of a license. If you opened a complaint, you could kind of short-circuit the process by granting her application opening a complaint and maybe adjudicating the complaint at the same time, perhaps offering her a letter of concern, entering into a consent agreement for a civil penalty based on her practicing without a license. You have those options available to you. One of the options is just granting her application and taking no action on her practicing X number of days without a license and not opening a complaint.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Anybody in the committee, any committee members feel like we need to go into executive session for further discussion about those options available to us?
I have a question. Let's just say we move forward with granting or moving forward with the application. Is there a record of this event somewhere in the future if this was to happen again? Or is the only way to have a record of this a letter of concern?
The letter of concern would be part of her file. It's not posted on the website, but it would be part of her file. If you just grant the application, don't open a complaint, take no action with respect to her practicing without a license, there'd be no record of that memorialized anywhere except within her file and the minutes of the meeting, but nothing's reported or anything like that.
The letter of concern is not something that is put on public record. It is more of a communication between the board and ourselves, and that it is memorialized when it occurred in that letter.
Correct, and a complaint number would be assigned to the matter, and it would be part of her record, the fact that a complaint had been opened.
So that if there were any future concerns about this applicant, we as committee members, as we needed to address them, we would see that letter of concern, and we would be reminded of it, correct?
Yeah, and she would have to disclose it on her next renewal, that because they ask if there has been a complaint opened against you. Letter of concern is not disciplinary, so it's not reported to the National Practitioners Data Bank. Okay, sorry. I guess I apologize. Behavior analysts don't have to report to the data bank. I apologize.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, should we move to deliberation?
Do we have legal questions that we need addressed?
No, not for me.
I don't feel a need unless I'm missing something.
No. So I guess if we're in deliberation, my discussion around this is, board staff reached out multiple times. There was a period of time where the individual was practicing. Depending on who she was providing services to, most likely the funders, unless they're private pay, would require an individual to hold a state license to most likely be paneled with them. So that was in lapse. So there's just multiple level. I mean, I appreciate the fact that she came forward, self-disclosed, and did the things she quickly could do. But there are, there are other consequences for this for the company that she's working with, as well within our state, for not attending to what is clearly her responsibility as a licensee. Those are my comments to my colleagues.
Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Reitz, and I would agree. I think I appreciate that everything was disclosed, and I think that it was important that she, as soon as she did become aware, although there were multiple attempts, she let us know that she did in fact practice for that period of time. And I think we do need to take that very seriously and think about what that means. And I would think a letter of concern might be something we should consider.
Yeah. I think those are all good comments, and I believe that in terms of procedurally, this is the venue or the time and place to have those, unless there's another reason to move into executive session. I think we can do this now. I also agree, by the way, that those are important issues, and I think there should be a record to serve as a reminder of the importance of this, if nothing else. So does anybody want to put forth a motion?
Sure. So I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say we move to forward her reinstatement to the board, but additionally recommend that a letter of concern be issued related to allowing her license to lapse and practicing without a license for a period of time.
And necessarily, Dr. Rates, that would include opening a complaint.
Yes, thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Dr. Davey, I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Further discussion? So I have a question about the procedures. So we've, if this passes, then the applicant would have a letter of concern in their file, and a complaint would be opened. And procedurally, we could. How do we address that complaint?
So the recommendation goes to the board, and if the board approves it, the applicant would be notified that your application has been approved, but a complaint has been opened, and the board is willing to adjudicate the complaint, finalize the complaint, if you sign this letter of concern and agree to the issuance of the letter of concern. If she doesn't agree to the letter of concern, then she can respond to the complaint. We can go through the screening process where you guys would look at the complaint, her response, and then make a recommendation to the board. My understanding is that the motion is not necessarily contingent upon her signing the consent or assigning the letter of concern. I don't think there's a question about her ability as a behavior analyst, so you could go ahead and approve her application, and then she can either consent to the issuance of a letter of concern, or we can go through the complaint process and get to the point where the board can just issue her a letter of concern.
Okay.
May I ask, Ms. Durantes, Are you open to having the board issue you a letter of concern with respect to your failure to timely renew your license and practicing without benefit of a license for a period of time? Would you agree?
No, I don't have any. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So it looks like we'll be able to go ahead and approve her license, and she would consent to the entry of a letter of concern. And this matter would not have to come back to this committee.
And to be clear to the licensee, from here moving forward, when you
when she does her application, she has to check that this has occurred, correct?
At least on the next renewal in Arizona, she would have to disclose this.
Again, this gets to the point of understanding the rules and the statutes. So thank you.
Correct.
Thank you very much. This is very helpful. We have a motion. We have a second. We have clarification. Is there anything, any other questions or concerns about this motion? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And Dr. Davis-Wilson is recused. So motion carries. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Durantes, for being here.
Thank you.
Next item is item number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding behavior analyst certification survey, professional and ethical compliance code for behavior analysts. I can't forget who is Heidi. Is this you?
It's mine, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, I will just summarize this quickly. So we had the opportunity. The BACB is going through reaccreditation through their accreditation body, and the accreditation body requested that the BACB submit a survey to all of the regulatory boards that have licensure in their state. To just take a look at some recommendations around the ethics code. The survey timeline was very short, so we didn't have the opportunity. I think we had all of like 3 days or a little bit over to actually give a response. And so Dr. Davey and I did have some correspondence, and then I went ahead and provided the response. It's pretty basic as far as, you know, the current code itself is pretty standard. It aligns with the work of, you know, our sister professions like psychologists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. But there are some points of clarification that has been difficult. One, because I'm an ethics instructor kind of guiding students, I kind of took on that perspective of where are students running into some hiccups. But then also as a supervisor myself, looking at what, you know, these varying issues are. As you guys are aware, there is some conflict in the field nationally regarding the extent to which we should be human and the extent to which we should abide so strict to the code that kind of gray line is divided amongst several very well-known professionals in our field. And so I wanted to kind of capture some of the areas that we're seeing some of that discrepancy. One is going to be specific to the kind of definition of gifts, because some people interpret anything you could possibly ever have handed over to you as a gift, while others interpret it as, and the code listed as something being provided as a provision of services. And so I think that looking at the variations specific to cultural considerations that have to be taken into regard, again, being human in some instances, such as taking a glass of water or what have you, should something happen, you know, you're at a session, you spill your, you break your water bottle, you need a glass of water, there's conflict as to whether or not that is a gift or not. And so I did kind of just summarize that is sometimes problematic. I also found that throughout the code, they interchangeably kind of use client as including a supervisee and sometimes not including a supervisee. And so there's a little bit of conflict as an employer when you're a BCBI that owns an agency and a supervisee is considered a client and you're unable to give them a gift for their services.
Yet you have other employees that you're able to give gifts to because they're not behavior analysis trainees, or you're competing in a market where a business is owned by a non-behavior analyst and they can give the behavior analyst as many gifts as they would like. So there's a little bit of still kind of some rift and conflict around the idea of gifts. Another area that I did consult Dr. Davey on, because I wanted to make sure that I was not standalone in this idea of defining demonstration of competency as just being self-study. And so because it allows for an or in that, I find that I see personally in the work that I do that there are people that may watch a webinar or may read an article and implement something that is well outside of their scope of practice. And so I just made a comment regarding that, potentially defining competency in such a way that we could measure the effects of a self-study towards competency. Confidentiality, and like I said, the term of client, the use of PHI, there's still just some conflicts in the code. So for example, when it comes to confidentiality, there's several statements about PHI being restricted for clients, but PHI is also something that is restricted for employees as well. And so I think that, again, it gets into that sometimes we have clients, sometimes we don't. And then interestingly enough, the code says that you restrict PHI, the release of PHI for current clients, which was something that stood out to me as interesting because I don't know how past clients would then allow for the PHI to be in effect. There's a large debate around the use of photos with behavior analysis trainees. So there was some clarification that I was requesting from that. As far as the code specifically says that you cannot post on social media or anywhere anything involving a supervisee that may disclose PHI. That has been interpreted by the ethics hotline as being you cannot post even a behavior analyst could not even post a picture of an employee that's a supervisee. Again, I find that to be a little bit problematic as one, there's organizations that post, you know, marketing materials with supervisees all the time, but because they're not behavior analysts, the board's saying, well, that's not really our jurisdiction. But then you get these businesses that are owned by behavior analysts and they're only able to celebrate their non-behavior analysis trainees. They're only able to post marketing materials excluding those people. So there's just a conflict in it. And so the code, I think the code needs to clarify when they say clients, what does that mean? Supervisee, what does that mean? And under what circumstances does each one align? And you know, the ethics hotline and other sources have cited the release of PHI as being a HIPAA concern, which in HIPAA, it is allowed to be used with consent of the patient. And so I think it's a little bit conflicting when they cite, well, it's PHI and HIPAA says you are unable to release any of this information, but then HIPAA really does allow for proper disclosure and release with consent. So mainly that summarizes kind of the gist of everything that I said, that I added. And then Dr. Davey and I talked about, you know, to this same point, we're running into these kind of funky provisions that are specific to behavior analysts, but then we don't really have ethical guidance for kind of business ethics and organizations, and then how that is differentiated between a business that is ran by a behavior analyst and one that is not, because it kind of dictates how this code applies, and it puts behavior analysts in a really, really funky ethical predicament. For example, testimonials, behavior analysts are not to engage in testimonials with current clients and yada, yada, yada. But if the business is doing it and you know, the leadership and the business is not a behavior analyst, then that organization is able to do so, even though behavior analysts are working there and actually the ones providing services to the child. And so that's one of the concerns that I see when people talk to me about ethics. They ask me all the time, how does, you know, this company get to do testimonials, but we aren't able to. And I just think there's a lot of just muddiness around that. And I agreed with Dr. Davies' recommendation to maybe resolve that with some points of clarification for business ethics. That summarizes the feedback that we provided. And if you guys have any questions, I am happy to answer them.
Thank you for that detailed summary, and thank you for providing that feedback. Either of you know when there'll be a response or when the revised ethics codes will be available?
At this time, the board is still going through the accreditation process. It is definitely a when and not an if. I think that revisions to the code are coming. My thought, based on the other timelines they have going on, is that it will likely be in 2021, with all of their other standards changes. I don't think we'll see it sooner. However, it is important to note that they have changed the ethics code and updated it without notice. So a lot of their other activities that they do, they're very kind in the timeline that they give us. So they give us a year, 2 years, 3 years to start to prepare for some of these transitions. In the past, the ethics have had some immediate transitions. And so that's something to be on the lookout for, but we have not heard a date. I have not heard a date. I don't know, Dr. Davy, if you have any other information, but I have not heard a date yet.
I have no secret information.
Okay.
I do know that, Mr. Chair, I do know that they are interested in other stakeholder information, and I was excited to see this come to the regulatory boards because, one, I think it gives us the opportunity to address, you know, things that we would run into as a regulatory board as potentially being problematic. But two, historically, the stakeholder feedback around ethics has been kind of limited to one individual. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that they've definitely, likely due to the requirements of the accreditation, they've extended who they want that feedback from. And I think from the people that I've spoken to, and by all means, the subject matter expert that they use is phenomenal. I don't mean anything derogatory at all, but in practice, some of that translates very difficult. What I have found in some of my conversations, not pertaining to this survey, but pertaining to the ethics code and the work that I do in the area of ethics, is that there's a lot of push for moving towards more of a function-based ethics model that would look at some of the verbiage, really looking at intent and purpose and function, and not necessarily just a standard, you just don't do this. I think that if it's accreditation that's driving this, I think the challenge they're going to run into is that the accrediting bodies accredit other professions, and so they may not understand from a behavior analytic perspective why it's so important that we link in, you know, kind of the function piece to some of those code items. So I think it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle, but it was nice to see that there's conversations around that being had.
That is good news. Thank you. Okay. Any other comments or questions regarding item number 8? And there's no action required. So moving along to item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding access to public comments for 320-S- Behavior Analyst Service Policy Change. Dr. Davies, can you?
Yes.
Yes. First off, thank you to board staff for putting through this request through the Open Records Act or however you guys did it. I greatly appreciate it. We had heard through some discussions, particularly behavior analysts that were involved in helping craft the policy that Dr. Davidson just referenced, that there was significant opposition from SLPs and the SLP Association with regard to some terminology. If you guys have had a chance to look through the letter, it appears that there were just a plethora of responses submitted to our Medicaid group with our Medicaid medical director and Medicare and Access via the portal with regard to the policy. I will just say that I've seen in some states SLP associations oppose or try to amend the behavior analyst licensure bill to prohibit behavior analysts working on communication. This is the first time I've ever seen ASHA actually try to intervene on state policy that's affecting ABA services. I would just personally note that it's concerning that ASHA as an organization views their views on behavior are concerning, and that ABA only pertains to problem behavior. I think that that's ridiculous and ignores the substantial evidence of the efficacy of ABA interventions on building communication skills. And it also takes what I would term as an untenable position that domain happens to be within the SLP scope of practice and can't be addressed by other professionals or other disciplines. The term communication ultimately was removed from the policy for access with the understanding that behavior, the communication is behavior, and that the term communication itself was not needed to ensure that behavior analysts were allowed to practice within their profession and within their scope of practice in terms of building communication skills. I was the one that requested this because I think it's important that as a committee we understand that there are forces out there opposed to what we're doing, that there are forces out there that believe this is a turf war, that there are forces out there that see behavior analysts as only linked to dealing with problem behavior. And so I appreciate, again, board staff pulling this together, and I hope the committee took a chance to read through the comments. This was a concerted effort. You will see that by reading between the lines that obviously some talking points went out to the Arizona SLP Association, and that terminology was used multiple times to be submitted through the portal back to Access. I would just finally like to add that kudos to all the behavior analysts who have worked close with Access and our Medicaid plan here in Arizona to cultivate a strong relationships, demonstrate strong clinical skills, so that these sorts of incidences are taken with a grain of salt, as they should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davey, for that summary, and thank you for your effort in this. Can you please clarify for me what you said about the word communication? It was taken out, but it was taken out for the purpose of demonstrating that behavior is behavior inclusive of communication.
You're correct, but the term communication. Yep. Nope, you're correct in what you heard. The term communication though is now no longer in the policy.
Okay.
However,
and Mr. Chair, if I may.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that the itemized kind of list is removed entirely. Like, they had, like, a lot of, like, what is ABA, what isn't ABA. And so it really wasn't just isolated to communication. It really, all of the complaints regarding kind of semantics of language, Access went ahead and removed.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I, and Mr. Chair, if I may, I would add to that because I reviewed the comments and Dr. Davey, I do agree with you. However, my background with speech and you know, I also see the perspective and concern of the speech association specifically around communication disorders. Because I agree that the word communication should be inclusive in the work that we do. I agree that And again, to meet the semantics issue, we have our verbal operants that equally define communication. It's just not a language that is easily translatable to consumers. So I agree with all of that. The concern that I do see, and I see it in practice, is when a communication disorder is in place and a behavior analyst is still using simply behavior analytic procedures, which in some communication disorders can be effective, but in others are not. I see that as potentially being problematic, and I would like to remind, you know, the behavior analyst committee to remember our scope of practice when it comes to communication disorders, because I do think that that is drastically different than what you're referring to. And again, I think that the word communication, I think they misinterpreted what we were saying and what we do. I think they misinterpreted what ABA is, absolutely. If you recall, this is the same group that fought to ensure that they were considered QHPs for the ABA codes. And so this is this. I agree with your red flag and kind of alerting that we need to be kind of cognizant of these movements. I agree with that 100%. But I would add that caveat of we aren't trained in communication disorders, and that as a behavior analyst, we do need additional training. And how do we recognize that this is now beyond what is just communication as a behavior and now into apraxia, aphasia, some of the other more prominent communication disorders that become problematic in our treatment. And so I agree with everything you said. I would just add that caveat that we still have to recognize that they are themselves and or a neurologist or a neuropsychologist are the ones that are better equipped to help collaborate and co-treat with when it comes to communication disorders. And I think they kind of hung to that piece. And I don't think what we were saying meant to remove our obligation to that. But I just wanted to provide that clarification.
Thank you. Any other themes or comments about the access feedback that are noteworthy?
Dr. Davey, could you summarize what the implications are for practitioners I'm getting a feedback. So the implications for us as BCBAs or practitioners, and whether that that term communication, which they've asked to strike, and I guess was complied with by Access, what are your recommendations, and what do you think we as a committee should do moving forward?
That's a loaded question, man. I think one to Dr. Davis Wilson's point, there is this weird disconnect. And I'm just going to read one of the comments that someone wrote that says that while, this was just one that I highlighted, concerned about behavior analysts working on communication and social skills under their ABA certification. While ABA providers and SLPs work closely together, we each have our background knowledge in our skilled areas, behavior for ABA and speech/language for SLPs. It goes on to talk about the fact that please consider taking out assessment of our goals for communication unless it's done by an SLP or recommended by an SLP. I think there's just a lot of miscommunication or that we're talking past each other, and Diana kind of alluded to that. I don't think that any behavior analyst is wanting to do a language Arctic assessment, but I do think behavior analysts are wanting to reinforce successive approximations to a goal of a particular word or a particular sound and reinforce that and build upon it. And I don't think that those two, I don't think that the latter should be excluded from the practice of a behavior analyst. I don't think that SLPs would want positive reinforcement excluded from their scope of practice. And so I think that there's just a chance for perhaps
some communication with at least the Arizona chapter of ASHA. I don't think national is in the mood to have any sort of conversation with the state. And I do, so I think that maybe, you know, that might be one path for us is to speak to them and get some of this clarified.
And this is Jean. I'm just seeking clarification. Are you requesting or suggesting that the committee take some sort of action or communicate with Access?
No, not this time. I'm not suggesting that. I was just responding to Dr. Stenhoff's question. I don't know if there was an action. The action would be to invite a conversation with Arizona's ASHA group. But I don't know that that's necessary. I mean, I do think that at some point we may want to clear some of this up. I don't think Access needs to be involved. I don't think our discussion is with Access. I think that Access has been very clear that behavior analysts will continue doing what they need to do around behavior, and that includes communication.
So right now it's just more of a point of information for the committee.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So, Dr. Davey, okay, just to clarify, communication is still within the scope of practice for behavior analysts, even though the word communication was stricken from the Access document?
Access policy discussions with high-level Access individuals have stated that behavior is inclusive of communication. And I think that many of us studied CARS work and understand that 80% of problem behavior is due to a lack of communication.
And Mr. Chair, Dr. Stenhoff, the code does allude to the responsibility of the behavior analyst to practice under the practice and title act. So there is that piece where Access is saying, look, if it's okay by your practice and your regulatory body, then we're going to kind of default to the practice. And then they also reference the BACB healthcare guidelines. So they just kind of broadened the language. I think that when they released the version that had kind of the habilitative terminology of communication and yada and yada and yada, when they released all of that, I think it was with the intent to provide clarification, but because it just kind of, like I said, the semantics kind of got you know, under the skin of some professions, then they just said, you know what? Here's the task list. Here's the BACB healthcare guidelines. You guys have a practicing regulatory body that, you know, can deal with scope of practice issues, deal with it in all those places. So we're pretty, it actually served to benefit us because it actually broadened that language.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, moving on to item number 10, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the universal recognition statute.
Mr. Chairman, this is Heidi. I will provide some an update. I think the purpose of this agenda item is to try to bring the all members of the committee up to speed with respect to how the board has, what the board has encountered under universal recognition, which, as you may recall, is a new pathway of sorts for applicants establishing residency in Arizona to apply for a license. I'll share some data with you, which I think helps sort of frame this somewhat. As far as behavior analysts are concerned, all of three applications have been received and three licenses have been granted under universal recognition. By contrast, psychologist applications, there's substantially more of those, 27 applications thus far, with essentially 16 having been granted. Another 10 applications are in various stages of incompleteness or in the case of three, four of those, They will soon be presented to the board or are under consideration by the board. And so that leaves one application having been denied, and I will come back to that in a moment. So we don't know why the number of behavior analyst applications is so low, but I think we can apply maybe some, I'll call it informed speculation here, that it isn't particularly a desirable application pathway, because if a behavior analyst wants to come to Arizona to be a BA, they're more likely to want to secure the license prior to establishing residency in Arizona, and universal recognition requires having established residency. So it just may not be something that, you know, makes sense for out-of-state applicants to pursue. And I would love for the BA board members to augment then where I'm going to take the comments with respect to psychologists. I mentioned one license denial. That license denial was on a few different grounds, but one of the bases for denial was the applicant had long ago established residency in Arizona, 12 years, I think, was the period of time that she's been an Arizona resident. But overall, the board is struggling with interpreting some of the elements of the statute. In addition to the residency piece, there's also a challenge when looking at qualifications for licensure when the applicant is coming from a state where perhaps the education is from an institution that wasn't accredited, or they haven't passed the ECCC, the entrance examination. And so having these kinds of instances present in universal recognition applications. At its most recent meeting, the board asked to ask the Attorney General's office to issue a formal opinion to help to clarify some of the terms in the language that they find ambiguous. And again, I invite our BA board members to chime in to share anything that I've forgotten.
Nothing you've forgotten. I just would make one point that the low numbers, again, where it's across the U.S., 24, 24 plus, maybe only 30 of the 50 states actually have licensure to be able to move it across state lines at this point. So immediately that's going to cut down on perhaps some of those applicants. And I would also state that we're a little different, that we have a singular path to national certification and a singular recognition versus some of the other intricacies that psychologists have with regard to different tests, different requirements, state by state. And so I think the behavior analyst, because it being what I will just refer to as still being in its infancy compared to psychologists, is probably less complicated at this particular point in terms of accessing a license via certification from the national board.
Yes, this is Heidi again. I would agree with that. The low numbers in tandem with a high degree of uniformity across the jurisdictions that do regulate BAs make this for a much easier and consistent sort of exercise, and that's not the case with psychologist applicants and requirements across all the different jurisdictions.
All right, thank you. Is there a next step on after your data has been reviewed and digested and things like that? Is there a next step that our state will be taking regarding the universal recognition?
Yeah, I don't have a high degree of insight into, to answer the questions. What I can tell you is that the governor's office is requiring us to routinely, regularly report this data to them. So I will be, of course, complying with those requests. There are sort of, I haven't heard directly from any member of the legislature, but secondhand reports, perhaps, that the universal recognition statute language may be revisited in some fashion in the upcoming session. But for purposes of this board, we will just continue to address each application based on the facts and circumstances it presents, and await the formal opinion for some guidance to act on those applications.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing this with us. I think that there could be at some point some information we could glean from these numbers in the future if the policy still stands. So,
yeah, and if I may, one other development is that there are other states that are proposing very similar legislation to this. So that's something, too, that I think we should be aware of, that, what if another jurisdiction's new law has implications for this board? So I will do my best to, monitor those developments for you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, item 11 is a call for any new agenda items for future meetings, and our next meeting is February 5th. It's a Wednesday, correct? Yeah, Wednesday, February 5th. Future items?
Mr. Chair, maybe board staff, we requested to be considered for some upcoming statute changes. So maybe we can get an update on the status of that, of where we are as far as the session goes and what types of things we can expect for the remainder of the year as a committee as it pertains to the sunset hearing and what statutory changes we're going to have to make or we'll be able to make through the year or try to make.
That's an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm.
Any other items? Okay. Hearing none, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
A second.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, Dan, for cutting out the meeting. Hope you feel better.
Thank you. I'm going to take a little break. Take care.
I don't blame you.
Bye, everybody.